Now, folks, what about it? Has this Artemis thing caught your imagination? Older listeners, are you back in the sort of 60s, 70s and this, you know, the space race and all that sort of stuff? Or what? I ask because later on this evening, the four-person crew of Artemis will lose contact with planet Earth. I seem to remember that happened with the Apollo missions when they went around the sort of bare side as they travel around the other side of the moon, the dark side. The first person crew to do so. In many, many years. David Moir is, of course, the editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine. David, always a pleasure. How are you?
Very excited.
Are you?
Well, it's over 50 years since we've had people at the moon. And to put it into context, we're normally talking about the astronauts on the International Space Station, and a few have gone a little bit higher up than that. It's only 400 kilometres above the Earth's surface. The moon is 1,000 times further. So these people are really way out on a limb, and tonight they'll break the all-time record for the most distant humans ever in history. That was set by the unfortunate Apollo 13.
Dave, firstly, I believe the loo is broke, and if you're going to have a broken loo, you don't want it on the dark side of the moon.
Yeah, there's always problems with the toilets. It's the number one question NASA gets asked about manned spaceflight, and The toilet, they've managed to fix it and get it going. It's chugging along, and they have lots of other ways of getting rid of waste, shall we say. So it's not it's funny, but it's not a major issue for the astronauts.
Gotcha. You see, look, is there anything in this? The old black and white grainy footage that I've seen, you know, they're planting flags on the moon. Didn't they do the bouncy around in the big sort of boots, and then didn't somebody hit a golf shot and all the rest? They're scooting round, David. What are your grounds for excitement?
Well, this Artemis 2 mission is part of a concerted program to build a moon base. So when it happened in the 1960s and 70s, it was a big race with the Soviet Union in order to prove who was technologically superior. Used up 5% of the US's federal budget. You wouldn't get that kind of money today. So everything's been done on the cheap, but space flight is much easier today, and we know how to do it as well. The kind of computers they have on board now are ridiculous compared to what we had the Apollo era, and the Apollo era basically gave us the entire computing system that we have today. Back then, people thought there'd be huge computers the size of skyscrapers that would do all the world's computing. Now we've all got more than that in our pockets.
That's amazing. And is that true, that this phone that I'm sitting in front of me here has more computing capacity than the Apollo missions?
Way more. Probably your washing machine has more computing power. There's about 1 trillion transistors in a smartphone, all told. You know, that's 1 million transistors. Back in the old days, each one of those would have been a valve. And when semiconductors came in, that making little integrated circuits is what enabled them to go to the moon. They couldn't have carried giant computers then. And that miniaturization, after Apollo was over, people went out into industry and started looking for applications for this. We ended up with the personal computer, first of all for business, then for homes, and now it's in everything, but especially in smartphones, which are extremely powerful devices.
David, I heard another analyst say that essentially the purpose of this one is not, fireworks and all the rest. It's just simply to do it, because this has the makings essentially of a minibus that they could be up there every 6 months going forward and starting, as you say, maybe bringing up blocks or whatever they want to bring up. I can't get my head around that, because the moon to me, in its sort of most basic sense, is a bit rubbish. There's nothing up there. There's no mountains or sea or interest or life as far as we know. So what in the gut, David, is important about us getting to the moon?
Well, there's a lot of very interesting things on the moon. Down at the South Pole, we think there's water inside the deep craters that have never seen sunlight. And that's fuel to get to Mars. It's also the water that people need. To launch that off the surface of the Earth would cost a fortune. The gravity on the moon is 1/6. So as a staging post to Mars, which is what NASA have said they're going to do, and it's the kind of technology and the engineering that you expose your workforce to that drove the American economy to be as big as it is, the world leader in electronics and high-tech economy, shall we say. And you never know what's going to come out of all this. And they're also in a space race again, this time with China. The Americans are going to put humans on the moon in 2028, just two years' time. The Chinese have said they're going to do it in 2030. Right. The lunar base should come on in 2033. So this is the start of something big. They're going back to the moon. This time they're staying, and they've got Mars, another 1,000 times trip, in their sights.
David, you see the moon potentially as the Earth's saviour. If we are to persist and go, say, and I know it's controversial, but get off the oil, but maintain the like of nuclear, that the moon essentially becomes a dump, you know, for keeping that stuff out of the living planet Earth. Is that on the horizon?
In fact, it's the other way around. Jeff Bezos, who owns the space company Blue Origin, of course, Amazon fame, and Elon Musk, both young kids interested in astronomy that went on to big things, that he said in his speech when he was just graduating from high school that he thinks the Earth should be preserved and all the heavy industry should be done out in space.
Oh, my goodness.
So hopefully we've learned our lesson about what to do with the Earth. And one of the photographs they'll be taking this evening is the one taken in 1968 by Apollo 8, which we think gave rise to the whole environmental movement. When they saw this blue marble rising over the moon's surface, Earthrise, it's titled, and people realized we're on this spaceship, the Earth, with a very thin atmosphere that's keeping all now 8 billion of us alive, and how important it is to protect that. So they're hoping to, inspired by that, repeat that particular picture.
Gotcha.
And thousands more as well. We're just, in Astronomy Island magazine, we're just worried about how many pictures we're going to have to put into the next issue.
How many blue dots you're going to have to squeeze in. But it was remarkable, you know, that all the ever-known human conscience, endeavour, existence, the natural order, the evolution of the planet, it all had happened in this little millimetre.
Yeah.
At the middle of a photograph.
Exactly. It's just the thin skin surrounding this planet that's keeping all that life alive. You know, and it does bring home to you the importance of the Earth, and it makes what's going on in the world today look rather trivial by comparison. As one of the astronauts said, you know, on the way to the moon, this Artemis 2 mission, you know, we all just need to get on together.
But it is when you sort of see it in those, at that sort of scale, how mad we are not to absolutely treasure this place. Ach, I don't know, we get cliched. David, a colleague writes in the BBC, for about 40 minutes later today, the four astronauts will be alone on the dark side of the moon, each with their own thoughts and feelings, travelling through the darkness of space, a profound moment of solitude and silence, with no eyeline toward our planet or their sort of origin planet. Quite a moment. Would you do it if you? I'm sorry, again, it's a cliched question, maybe, but would you do it, David? I wouldn't. I'd be terrified.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Would you?
I mean, if you're going to risk your life to do something at the cutting edge of technology, of exploration, to see the moon up close. I mean, we held a moon watch back a few days before they launched, just to show people the moon up extremely close, and even through telescopes on the Earth, it's absolutely fascinating terrain. So, you know, there are some things in life that are worth risking your life. NASA's not going to really risk people's lives, but I wouldn't have a problem signing up for the riskiest of missions. I was lucky enough to meet Neil Armstrong, talk to him one-on-one for half an hour.
Boy.
And back then, he thought that his chances of success, of returning alive, was about 50-50. They wouldn't allow that today in our modern health and safety.
He had a young family, as most of them had.
Yes, he had, and he had had family tragedies before. One of his daughters passed away, and the story is he left a memento on the moon in her honour. But, you know, they were youngish. Perhaps I won't give away my age. Coming to the end of your career, you start to think, you know, this will be your mark on history. And if we can inspire young people in particular with this particular mission, you know, they are going to live on the moon and potentially other planets by the time they're my age, and they'll know astronauts. There's less than 1,000 people have ever been in space to date, but they're going to be as common as airline pilots are. I know a few personally, and so will everybody else. There'll be an astronaut living in your town almost certainly, you know, in a few decades' time, let's say.
Good Lord. Good Lord. David, a point on which we will part company. Thank you, as always, for that. David Moore is editor of the Astronomy Ireland magazine, a hearty community of space gazers from this island and far beyond. Our thanks, as always, there to David. Listen, we have to have a wee bit of water, boys, taking us up towards 1 o'clock. Here's a wee bit of the water, boys, though.
You have